Nice to be back with you all for a little while. And this morning will be a little different than the rest of this visit. We're going to Vrindavan. Canto 10, chapter 38. And we're completing text 14 and going on to 15. This is Akura's journey from Mathura to Vrindavan. And Akura is talking to himself or thinking. Akura is not discussing with anybody. He's contemplating meeting Krishna. And the first set of verses, he is experiencing this ecstasy, and that subsides, and then another ecstasy. Sanchari Bhava, Jiva Goswami says. And then another. He's floating in the waves of Bhakti Rasa. Jiva Goswami's teaching is the spiritual world is Bhakti Rasa. It's all about relationships, and it's bhakti rasa. And so bhakti rasa has different parts. Some of those parts are sanchari bhavas, and that's what this pure devotee Akura is experiencing. And then starting with 11, we're now at 14, he waxes a little philosophical, describing Krishna's position, the object of his affection. And in Jiva Goswami's commentary, which I'm just going to read the end of for text 14, it gives a little mini summary of those first three and then this concluding verse of this section. So, starting verse 11, because Krishna glances with cause and effect, and is without absorption in the act, he can destroy all illusion and difference by his own shakti. So this text 11, Jiva Goswami is keeping it really sutra-like. I'll unpack it a little bit. He's going to see Krishna, and he recognizes that Krishna is, or an expansion of Krishna, a portion of a plenary portion of Krishna is Mahavishnu. So he, Krishna, glances, ikshate, over Pradhan. And he's not attached to that act. There's a whole other section in Bhagavat Sandarbha where he explains this contradiction that he does things and he doesn't do things. I create the four varnas, chatur varna, mayashristam, but then I'm the non-doer. So he's doing, but he's the non-doer. And he does by his chit-shakti, and following that, then cause and effect, he's the original cause of cause and effect. He's the original cause of everything, and yet he's not attached. And he himself remains not attached by his chit-shakti or spiritual potency or sva-mayaya. And because of that, he, Krishna, is not subject to illusion and the byproducts of illusion that others are subjected to in the cause and effect realm. Seeing things separate from Krishna is one of those. Seeing oneself as separate from Krishna is one of those. And bewilderment is another one of those. So Krishna is not subject. And then the inference is when it becomes attached to Krishna, it becomes also free from those things. So that was text 11. Then another feature of Krishna, being invisible to all, Since he acts by his glance, he can only be inferred but not seen in all beings. Sada Neshu. By jivas endowed with senses and antakarana, who are unqualified to see him, since they lack capacity on their own, being produced by his glance and his maya. That's a summary of 12. So, starts with his glance, and it brings about cause and effect. It's a spiritual potency glance, not what we do, it's what he does. And because of that glance, he creates things, and he, Krishna, or the cause of this creation, remains invisible. The word that's used in the verse is Vishnu, that's the all-pervasive supreme, and he's invisible, but one can infer his existence. You can't see him, but you can infer his existence by taking help of these three things. Senses, they're using antakarana. Antakarana can mean different things depending on context, but generally here in this section, it's the mind, the senses, the mind, and the intelligence. And references made to the Canto 2, Chapter 2, verse, where one can understand the personality of Godhead by taking help from the intelligence. You can't see, but you can understand, you can infer. So, but you can't do that either without the Chit Shakti of the Supreme Lord. So otherwise, you're still in Maya and you can't infer anything about what's the source of everything. You won't get it right. That was verse 12. So here's that verse, those who want to take a note, 2235. Long purport, you have to read it like 6, 7, 8 times till it, at least I have to understand what's Prabhupada explaining in the purport. But it's this taking help from the intelligence to infer the existence of the Supreme. So here's Jiva Goswami's rendering of that verse. The Shanta Bhakta sees the Supreme Lord in all beings by the mercy of Paramatma. The Lord and the Jiva are inferred by symptoms such as their observable intelligence. And then commentary goes on. Even his angsas are hard to see. So angsas can mean his expansions. It can mean the living entity, because they're also angsas. Even his angsas, anything that's spiritual, is hard to see, as expressed in the following, and he quotes 1041 Bhagavad Gita, Vishtabhyaham idam Krishnam. I am spread throughout the universe by just one portion, one of my portions. Okay, again, verse 12 indicates the glory of attaining realization of even the expansions of the Lord. Verse 13 indicates the reason it is easy for a Kura to see the Lord, that is, the Lord's merciful. Verse 14 summarizes everything. Therefore, I am most fortunate. He's going to go see Krishna. So now, continuing. So this is commentary on 1038.14. Sanatan Goswami writes, the greatness of his fame has been shown in the previous three verses, so 11, 12, 13. I will today see that famous person. The summary conclusion, his good fortune. Today, I will see the teacher, who is the goal of Brahman, the goal of Brahma, or the great devotees. He is the means of establishing what is to be proved. Far out. The means of establishing what is to be approved, that's him. He's what's to be approved, but he's the means to establish what's to be approved, to be proved. Without his help, you can't, you're stuck. After describing in general, particulars are given, such as, he is the most beautiful in the three worlds, etc. Mahatam refers to Nanda and others. I will see the Lord. So he's going to see Krishna, but he's also going to see Nanda and the others. I will see the Lord who displays Dadanam, a form which is desired by Lakshmi. Or, I will see that form which makes the three worlds beautiful. Trilokya Kantam. So he's beautiful within the three worlds, or he makes the three worlds beautiful. Both are suitable renderings. By manifesting small parts of his beauty, there is beauty within the three worlds. He destroys the happiness of the three worlds. He destroys the happiness of the three worlds. Material happiness. Semicolon. On seeing his form, one becomes detached from happiness of this world. Not only is material happiness given up, but also the happiness of liberation. His beauty gives joy to those who see Atma. Drishinmam. He gives happiness to the devotees. He is desired as an object of experience by the eyes, not just merely to see him, even by Lakshmi, worshipped by all devotees. After many nights, the dawns are now auspicious. The poetic. He's been in darkness and now he's going to see Krishna, the dawn. Jiva Goswami's Krama Sandarbha is verse by verse commentary on Bhagavatam. So his commentary for this verse, 14. Today I shall certainly see the Lord, who is attainable by great devotees and gives instructions, who is joy to all people having eyes, who is the most beautiful in all the worlds, whom even Lakshmi desires as her shelter. Now all the mornings of my life have become auspicious. I have very great fortune today. And the last is for this verse. Vishwanath writes, Akura considered, it's similar. Quote, today my eyes will relish a veritable festival of bliss. I will see Sri Krishna, whose form is the reservoir of the conjugal attractions of the rasa dance, and an aspired for by the goddess of fortune, who forever resides on Vishnu's chest. The mornings following many nights have brought auspiciousness for me. Otherwise, it is implied, quote, without so many sleepless nights, this fruit would never have come about. So, the sequence of verse changes, the focus, the mood shifts to text 15. So that there's anticipation and then there's the meeting. And then the meeting goes, then I will alight at once from my chariot and bow down to the lotus feet of Krishna and Balaram, the Supreme Personalities of Godhead. Theirs are the same feet that great mystic yogis striving for self-realization, bear within their minds. I will offer my obeisances to the Lord's cowherd boyfriends and to all the other residents of Vrindavan. So interwoven in all of this, I mean, it's not, the trumpet isn't being blared, but it's there, that the mystic yogis, after lifetimes of austere practice, they may meditate on the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. They may not also. And if they're successful in meditating upon the Supreme Lord, they're not able to even see, what to speak of, touch a particle of dust from the lotus feet of the Lord that Akura is expecting to be able to do. In other words, bhakti is far superior to dhyan. And another important point is Akura is really old, and Krishna is 11 years, 8 months. Krishna is very young. So Krishna is probably going to feel awkward, like Queen Kunti felt awkward when Krishna would come before her and touch her feet and fold his palms and offer her respect as a mother because she was aunt. Akura is much older than Queen Kunti. He's very elderly. And, you know, in the Yadu dynasty, he's one of the superiors. Here's little boy. But Akura has Dasya Bhakti, and he's going to do what Dasya Bhaktas do. And he does it. And Krishna responds in a way to accept the mood of love of Akura. But his Dasya Bhakti is being really stimulated. It's going through the roof. He hasn't seen, but he is anticipating seeing. I'll just mention this because every time I speak about this, it pulls a cord inside that says, this is all very appropriate for us. We're not pure devotees going to see Krishna today. But we're sadhakas, and sadhakas should have in mind a goal. Why am I getting up early, and why am I thising and thatting and chanting, and what's the goal? Where's the train going? I got on this train, and one of the ways to make sure that you don't take a nosedive in Krishna bhakti that sometimes happens to people is become clearer and clearer. Stay focused. What's the purpose? Sankalpa. What's the purpose? Or, using common language, in strategic planning, what's the key result area? What's the KRA for our chanting japa? Because if you don't have a clear idea of results, you can be sincere as all heck, but you're not, where's it going to take you? Somewhere, but you don't really know where because you haven't taken the time and trouble to go through the strategic planning exercise of, what's our objectives and what are the ways to observe, what are our smart goals, and trying to go forward with our... So, using that modern context, it's inspiring. Here's the mature stage of where we want to go. May that day come that we'll know maybe we won't. You know, it's in such a specific way, but he is very fortunate. He knows at the end of the day he's going to see Krishna. He's stimulated. His bhakti is very wonderful. So let's see. Vishwanath's commentary. After seeing Krishna and Balaram, I will get down from the chariot and immediately bow down to their lotus feet. Those feet which yogis hold by their intelligence in order to see directly the self, svalabhya, I will directly hold. I will also bow down to the companions of Krishna and Balaram, accompanying them. I will also bow down to all the inhabitants in the forest, like from yesterday evening, friendly relation to all living entities. Further, occur a thought, quote, this is very similar. As soon as I see Krishna and Balaram, I will immediately jump off my chariot, bow down, and hold on to their lotus feet. Similar. Okay. Jiva Goswami writes, Akura develops another desire. So it's a change of sequence. There's 22 verses of his thoughts. He develops another desire, being dissatisfied on only seeing the Lord, which is natural for a devotee. I will offer respects, namasye. Those feet are the object of fixed contemplation, dhritam. By repeated intense reflection. So these are stages of absorption. Contemplation, fixed contemplation, repeated intense reflection, dhyā, by yogis and atmaramas, what to speak of devotees, for attaining the Lord, sva, labdhaye. I will offer respects to his friends who are present with the two, abhyam, or the friends of the two. Quote, your relatives and the Yadavas will also be their friends. Why do you not respect the Yadavas, then, one might doubt. The friends of Vraja are intimate friends, playing with him in the forest. I offer respects not only to the friends, but all living beings in Vrindavan. To that extent I will go. That is the meaning expressed by Sridhar Swami with the word itti in his commentary. And concluding with Sanatana Goswami writes, similar, Akura developed another desire, being dissatisfied and only seeing the Lord, which is natural for a devotee. Foot is in the singular, but means 2 feet. He will offer respects to the feet of both Krishna and Balaram individually, or he will grab a foot of each brother and offer respects to both simultaneously. I will offer respects, namasye. Paragraph. Lotus feet, quote, indicates that great desire has arisen within him. He now desires to offer respects to his feet only, without considering the Lord's qualities, etc. Yogis hold those feet in their minds, dhyā. Instrumental case, this is a detail. The yogis hold those feet by meditation, with great attention, not thinking of anything else. Holding in their minds means contemplating with concentration. The yogi referred to here is a person in samadhi or a devotee practicing smarana. Paragraph. I will offer respects to the friends of the two, Abhyam. To attain those friends, or I, what to speak of offering respects to the friends of those two, I will offer respects to all the living beings in Braja. This verse gives more details than the previous verses. And that's the end for this morning. We'll continue someday. Change of topics. Starting this evening. The the sound vibration of Srimad Bhagavatam when heard with attention, and even particularly when heard from the heart or with the heart, something happens. I mean, lots of things happen, but these are stimulations of ecstatic love for elevated devotees. They derive great happiness just hearing that sound vibration, because their love for Krishna is being stimulated by hearing of the love that Akura has for the Supreme Lord. Even they may be in a different rasa, they're appreciative, they're moved by the quality of his love. So we're being gifted the opportunity to associate with Akura's devotion through sound, and it's cleansing, it's relieving of material contaminations. And it's stimulating spiritual happiness by appreciating his happiness. He's a matured, by age, a matured person. But he's not thinking at all of his status as an elder amongst this esteemed Yadu dynasty. He's just fixed on his mood of devotion to Krishna. I find it interesting that he's being sent by Kamsa, whose intention is to kill Krishna. So he's the messenger of a bad person to kill Krishna. And he understands his mission is to bring Krishna to Kamsa to kill Kamsa. He's really clear who he is, what he's doing, why he's doing it. He's also very clear in the opportunity that's being provided to him as Krishna's mercy. To take part in his pastimes, to see him, to this and that. He not only sees Krishna and Balaram, he's taken to the home of Nanda Maharaj. He has conversation with Nanda Maharaj. Have a conversation with Nanda Maharaj. And he understands what good fortune. Although he is also a devotee, Kura is also a devotee, he understands the super excellent position of the Brijbasis, the super excellent position of Nanda amongst the Brijbasis, because he is conversant with the opulence feature, he understand of Krishna. He understands Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead very clearly. And at the same time, he understands the more exalted position of the residents of Vrindavan that do not see him that way. They just are filled with love for him. He understands all that. Like earlier the same day, when Narada visited, he understood the same set of things. There are different moods of love. And those who have a clear understanding, they're perfected devotees, they have great reverence for the Brijbasis, the cowherd boys, and all the inhabitants of Vrindavan. That's their position. Now, one might wonder, why don't they just stay in Vrindavan, get the association of all these very elevated persons? One of the answers is to reside in Vrindavan isn't just a matter of, you know, building a house. To reside in Vrindavan there's a mood of love, and one needs the mercy of those residents of Vrindavan. So we find most learned Uddhava and most learned Brahma desire to get dust from the residents of Vrindavan, take birth in some form so that some dust can fall on their heads. They understand their limitations, their disqualification, or not yet having the qualification necessary. Same idea comes in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Just before Krishna goes to Dwaraka and then to Vrindavan, he's being coached by Narada and Uddhava. And in Narada and Uddhava's conversation, in the presence of Gopakumar, they say, this boy he has qualifications that we don't have. He just has natural, spontaneous love for Krishna in Vrindavan. We don't have that. They have another qualification. They're not less than a pure devotee. They're pure devotees, very exalted pure devotees, very revered by all the devotees. But there's a special qualification. It's in other words, this the stimulation for achieving Raganuga Bhakti is either explicitly or implicitly being presented. Raganuga Bhakti, meaning spontaneous love, as is found in the residents of Vrindavan. The Bhagavatam is leading us there, you know, by reading it carefully and by advancing and progressing on the path of bhakti, it takes us there. That's just by chanting Hare Krishna, following Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that's meant to take us there also. That's the train that we got on. We didn't even know where it was going. It was just chant and be happy. Okay, I want to be happy. And yeah, I feel... So the starting point may, you know, not be with full understanding. That's okay. It's all benedictory. Janata Agha Viplava. The Bhagavatam starts with creating a revolution in the impious lives of sinful people. And, you know, all aboard. That's where the train is going. So each one of us has the opportunity to reach the destination. And a lot depends upon how carefully we perform our devotional activity, like this activity that we just did, hearing the Bhagavatam. And, you know, the story is wonderful, and then you keep going, and there's something more, and there's something more, and there's something more. There's potencies in the sound vibration. And as one becomes purified and uplifted, the removing of the negative, you know, and increasing in the positive. The path becomes more clear. The goal becomes more clear. The involvement in the process becomes more stimulating spiritually. And if we're not feeling that spiritual, more spiritually stimulated, it probably means we're not hearing very carefully and therefore there's offenses going on. And, you know, it doesn't mean, okay, throw your hands up in the air and quit or something. It means, let me do some course correction, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Let me apply myself to my practices and the services that flow from my practice with increased awareness of what Bhagavatam, we repeat those things. Let's see if there's some discussion. 12 after 8.
Okay. I have two questions. The first one is about the goal of finally seeing Krishna. Is it for everyone who goes back to the spiritual world, is it really true that they will be able to see Krishna? Like, depending on where they...
Why are you asking that question? Hmm? Why are you asking that question?
I think it's just a philosophical lack of understanding. Like, everyone, depending on what their rasa ends up being or where in the spiritual world they end up being, will everyone actually be able to see Krishna?
Well, supposing you go to Vaikuntha, will you be able to see Krishna? Is that what you're asking?
Yes, but also based on...
No, but you won't see Krishna in Vaikuntha.
Right. And also based on what one's eternal service is. Like, even if you do end up in Goloka, for example...
Oh, if you go to Goloka, you'll see Krishna.
Okay. Okay.
He makes sure.
Okay, it doesn't matter. Like,
doesn't
because
matter.
Obviously you're serving servant of the
you
servant.
Be a bush, you'll see Krishna.
Okay. It's just some, I think, a lack of understanding or misconception that I needed clarification. Okay, and then the other question is a little more confusing. Basically, there's a confusion in my mind, and I think it arises from, you know, over many years repeatedly hearing warnings against, you know, jumping the gun in spiritual life or like sahaja tendencies and like, you know, just thinking too ahead of where you're at, kind of. So I've heard a lot of this throughout my life.
Good.
And so...
Me too.
Okay. But I think what I've also observed is because of this, it's also prevents me from opening the heart to the opportunity. And I'm saying this because this point about, you know, learning from Akura about the goal, you know, keeping the goal in mind as sadhanas... You've mentioned this previously in previous classes as we've been talking about on this chapter. And I remember very clearly the first time I heard you mention this application point, my thought immediately went to, oh my gosh, how can I even think about that? You know?
Sure.
And so I understand there's the warning part and that's important, but I feel like personally there's some...
block.
Yeah, I'm not allowing to open to that possibility even so. And it sounds like that's, you know, something, a door closed, like I'm not allowing that door to open. It sounds like I need to do something about it.
I'm familiar with the territory, personally. for the preamble reasons mentioned. At the same time, it's a fact that the gift of Lord Chaitanya is Braja Prem. And so at some point, you know, what's that point? At some point, the eagerness or acceptance, put it that, the acceptance that that's where my devotional life is meant to take me, and at some point, I need to, you know, it's like the opening of a seed that starts to, you know, you germinate a seed, and it kind of just sits there getting soaked up with water for a while and doesn't really do too much. And then there's some wiggle and it starts to. So let it come naturally. Don't on the one hand and on the other hand. So largely, the sahajya is when there isn't the qualified persons to associate with, you imitate. And when there are qualified persons to associate with, you hear from and assimilate. It's a descending, not an ascending process. The sahajya is imitating falsely by ascending, you know, pretending, cosmetically putting on something. So that's what's to be avoided. But the other is not to be avoided. The assimilation is not to be avoided. So open your heart to one while being cautious about the other. And even when you're hearing from the one, don't fool yourself where you are. You know, be honest to yourself and similarly to others. And much of this process is from the heart. It's internal. It's not the external parts are the same. The sadhana bhakti is the same whether one is internally cultivating this deeper mood of love or not. The external looks the same. So it's entirely an internal or from the heart growth. Unless and until it gets to like a super advanced stage and your Pundarik Vidyanidhi or your, you know, something. Otherwise, it's internal. So open the heart to hearing from the right sources, not the imitating people sources, the sahajya sources, from the right people sources, and slowly, not like an overemphasis upon, but just a natural, like the germination of a seed. And then, you know, the hearing is the same that you were hearing before, but it's just you're hearing with that flavor or that internal, you know, movement of the heart. So open the heart to that happening from the right sources. And, you know, don't worry about it.
Okay.
Because worrying about it, not only it inhibits that natural growth, it's just... It's part of the you know, the doership mentality, frankly. Because it's not something that happens because you do something. It just comes from the heart. It is a spontaneous development. Okay.
If it's okay, may I ask something about the first question, that first answer that you gave?
Okay.
About basically... So if you go to Vaikuntha, we're not going to see Krishna. If we go to Goloka, Krishna will make sure that we see him. So as a practicing devotee who doesn't know where we'll end up, should we still consider that because Lord Chaitanya has given us this gift,
you'll go according to the consciousness that has evolved. The one sense is, I have an eternal relationship with Krishna. It is what it is. And it may be here, maybe there, maybe this, maybe that. It is what it is, and I'm not going to worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because it is what it is. That's a static picture. And then there's the dynamic picture. The dynamic picture, by that I mean, it's not by accident. It's by divine arrangement that we're in Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement. We could be somewhere else doing something else in this lifetime and go somewhere else. We're in this by divine arrangement. And the followers of Lord Chaitanya are in the path that takes them to Braja. So desiring to be with Krishna in Braja is natural.
Okay.
If Krishna's plan is something else, fantastic. At the same time, my eternal relationship may be so, but you'll go where your attachment is. And we're being encouraged to develop that attachment. That's our teachers. I know, like supposing somebody taking piano lessons. And there are different teachers that will teach piano in a different way. But if you got a piano teacher, you'll learn that gift that your piano teacher has, and you learn from them that gift that they have. Or a dance teacher, or a math teacher, or a... So here's a spiritual teacher. And this is our whole line of spiritual teachers, that Manushyanam Sahasreshu Kaschid Yatati. So how likely is it that there's people out there that are, you know, in line to go to Krishna in Krishna Loka? Not too many people, you know, percentage-wise, mathematically, according to Krishna. So we, you know, but that's okay. We give Krishna's mercy anyways. And whatever happens, happens. But as far as, it's not an accident, we're in Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement. We've been invited, and we said yes. So don't be shy. You know, be humble, but don't be shy. Just accept. And let that attachment for Krishna grow. And Krishna will take you. Kamal Krishna Maharaj asked Prabhupada, I can't recall, but he wanted to know, is it possible for one's relationship to change?
Mm-hmm.
And there was with some details. And Prabhupada's answer was this: yes, bhakti is not static, it's ecstatic. So even if you're in your some relationship, so that by association and by, you know, like Narada or Uddhava or Brahma, they, you know, take birth in Vrindavan and let the dust of the residents of Vrindavan fall on my head. That's a hankering. They're not. That's the static, that's the dynamic or ecstatic mood. So don't imitate.
Mm-hmm.
Don't, you know, get sahaja influence, but, you know, follow what Lord Chaitanya has given us, what's there in the Bhagavatam, and revealing what's there in the Bhagavatam. And our acharyas, on behalf of Lord Chaitanya and his other associates.
Okay. Thank you, Maharaj.
Anything else? online. Let's go.
This first question is from Swati Murali. And she asks, Guru Maharaj, for Akrura, it seems he is different from Uddhava in the sense that he didn't want to have a position in Raja. But does that mean in the spiritual sky he only resides in Dwaraka?
In order to reside in Vraja, there has to be a hankering to reside in Vraja. And one has to get the mercy of the residents of Vraja to reside in Vraja. So I think that answers the question.
Also, are there any exchanges between Dwarakavasis and Vrajavasis in the spiritual world, like when Akrura came to Vrindavan? Is there any interchanges, or are they confined to their dham?
No. They may visit, but they have their home. They have their place. That's it? Anything? Prabhupada ki? Jai.